it's not like it used to be.
Richmond and fell. It's a time I remember oh so well. The night they go on Dixie down, when all the bells were ringing. The night they go on Dixie down, and all the people were singing.
Right, and good afternoon, and welcome to the American Awakening. This is your Friday, March 30th, 2018 edition of the American Awakening. Your host, Michael Herzog, and I'll be with you for the next 2 hours. Now, today's going to be a little bit different, folks, because I've got a special guest coming up. Actually, I've got two. I've got my aircraft riding co-pilot, which we're going to switch seats today, and I'm going to let Daryl pilot the plane because he knows how to fly it and I don't. And we've got a special guest by the name of Michael Gaddy coming up here shortly, and he's going to be filling us in on a few of the blanks of the Civil War. So I'm kind of excited about that, looking forward to it. I also want to mention before we get started on this, folks, that many of you know that I was on John's show yesterday breaking down a timeline for this Donald Trump strategy, and I got a call this morning from John wanting me to come back up there again and kind of, I don't know, re-explain or fill in the blanks of what I was unable to do yesterday. So I've kind of got that on my plate as well. So I spent this morning trying to, write up and get up to speed on any omissions that I've had. So I'm probably going to wind up spending a half an hour to an hour with John this afternoon. But that said, let's shift gears here and welcome, first of all, Daryl. My co-pilot's going to switch seats with me, be the pilot today. How you doing, Daryl?
Well, I'm doing good. I hope I can get the gear up today. So very good.
I'll take care of the gear, and I'll take care of the flight right. plan. But I also want to welcome special guest Michael Gaddy. Michael, welcome to the American Awakening. How are you, sir?
It's great to be with you. I'm going to have to skip on the aviation metaphors, though.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what, Daryl, I want you to kind of give the audience an overview of who exactly Michael Gaddy is and why we were having him on the show today.
Well, I became acquainted with Michael Gaddy a little over 2 years ago, and he profoundly changed my perceptions and then my understanding and application of history that I thought I had some kind of understanding of, and he pretty much shattered that paradigm and left me with my jaw open and my mind buzzing. And as I went along in time and continued to listen to him and then occasionally get the opportunity to speak with him, I found out that the picture started to come into focus that absolutely everything that we are under the oppression and tyranny of to now, at this day and age, was a result of that time period, supposedly called the Civil War. And with that, I'd like to offer to Michael here an opportunity to share with some people his background and what motivated him to focus on this particular period of time.
Absolutely, and I'll tell you what, as the reason I'm sitting in the co-pilot seat and the reason that Michael Gaddy's a passenger, he's flying in the cockpit, though, by the way, folks, is that I'm going to take a lesson just like the listening audience today. And so, Michael Gaddy, go ahead and give us that overview and let us know.
Well, gentlemen, I would think that possibly my greatest motivator was my grandfather, and it happened to me at a very early age. When he, a man of almost 100 years old, who had spoken with several of our relatives who were veterans of our Second War for Independence. I hate the Civil War nomenclature. And he just spurred an interest in me, and I had this quest for knowing the truth about what had happened, especially when I realized that almost everything I'd been taught in school, both at the high school and elementary school level, but also in college, was basically a falsehood. And,
okay, Michael, let me stop you for just a second. I'm getting a message from my engineer, Daryl. He says he thinks he's getting a feedback. Have you got something playing in the background there?
Well, let me see if this helps. I'm going to do something right now.
Okay. All right. I'm sorry, Michael. Go ahead and continue.
No problem. So I began to really get into it, and during my time working in government service, especially in what is now referred to as the deep state, I had the opportunity to access records and just volumes and volumes and volumes of records in the National Archives and in the Library of Congress. And then I saw that not only are what we are being taught or were being taught in our schools and what are being taught to our children was totally false, but the fact that the government, in fact, possessed documentation that everything that was being taught was false, but they weren't going to reveal that information unless someone went to look for it.
Well, wow, is that a surprise, Daryl? I mean, in light of what I've been reporting over this past week, you know, it's just part and parcel to everything we find out. Michael, continue.
Well, I just wanted to throw in, yesterday I was giving a presentation on the deep state, which I've given several all over the state, and I was giving one yesterday, and during the course of my presentation, I had two judges get up and walk out.
Wow.
When I challenged them, because I was getting these incredulous looks when I would make certain statements about how our entire system had been co-opted. And so I started asking them questions. One of them was a local, I think you'd call it Superior Court judge, and the other one was actually a Court of Appeals judge in the state. And so I started throwing some questions out there, and I got very little except skeptical looks. And then when I started challenging them, including saying, well, folks, there's a reason that we don't call law school Constitution School, because they teach two different things. And then that is what prompted the exit of a couple of them.
Okay, Daryl, I'm going to pass the controls to you, Daryl. You go ahead from here.
Well, thank you. I've got the controls and the throttle. So, Michael, it would appear on their behavior that they didn't appreciate you exposing the duality of the reality that we've been led to believe is real.
Well, if we expose the truth, expose their falsehood to the truth, Daryl, we have a totally different paradigm, and our government is not going to allow the people to take our government back to that which was intended, not without an extreme struggle.
Well, yeah, you know, this has been an ongoing theme, and with what your history that you brought forward and how you brought it forward nailed. Solidified all the other information that I'd learned over the years, and this deception that is real. It's not a theory. It's real. It's based in fact and can be demonstrated in source documents that you have done the hard, deep research on in a physical way, just not on the internet. Michael's traveled around the country, spent large chunks of time actually driving in cars and going places and reading. Dusty documents. I got a question for you, Michael. You know, in the last two or three years, the general population has sort of become increasingly aware of this idea of fake news and media manipulation. You know, I tend to refer to it as infoganda. I got a question for you here. How long has this been going on?
Well, that's, I think, is the theme of the subject, or the subject of the theme, I'm sorry. This all started with our Second War for Independence, and I think we can lay the groundwork for that. And one of the things, Darrell, that piqued my interest way back when I first started doing research was a quote in a diary from Thomas Jonathan Stonewall Jackson to his basically his chief of staff. And that very just, you know, four sentences or what have you, maybe even two sentences, that he stated just really piqued my interest. And he said, "Mr. Pendleton," which was Sandy Pendleton, his chief of staff, "if the Republicans lose their little war, they'll be voted out in the next election, and they will return to their homes in New York or Massachusetts or Illinois, fat with their war profits. But if we lose, we lose our country, we lose our independence, we lose it all." And probably the most able military commander in the history of America, for him to make such a comment and to be able to find that and see it, just really piqued my interest. And I really wanted to see and to be able to justify what Thomas Stonewall Jackson had said. And so in getting into looking at it, I saw that in some point in late 1862, the Abraham Lincoln-led Republican administration realized that their unconstitutional, immoral war perpetrated on the people of the South was generating a tremendous loss of life and property, and at some point history would demand an explanation for what could only be considered by any logical means, treason. They also realized that should they lose this war, there would certainly be legal repercussions for their blatant disregard for the limits of the Constitution. Lincoln, after all, if you will remember, had ordered up an army of 75,000 soldiers to invade the citizens of his own country, and which prompted me to immediately think of Article 3, Section 3 of our Constitution, which states, "Treason against the United States shall consist only in levying war against them or in adhering to their enemies, giving them aid and comfort." So when Abraham Lincoln unconstitutionally ordered up an invasion of the southern states and ordered troops to do it, he was guilty at that time of treason. So that brought me even more down the road into the rabbit hole.
Well, you know, there's been much said about the premise, or what I like to call the pretense, for this this treasonous action. Can only be described as a treasonous action by virtue of even what the Constitution describes as what treason is. And so what were some of the more pressing issues as to why the North felt they needed to take this action? What was the basis of that? Did it have something to do with slave ownership or something like that? What was that?
Well, actually, no. Had little to nothing to do with slavery. Slavery was an economic issue, but slavery was dying because of the large importation of immigrants into the country. And even Karl Marx realized that possessing the means of labor was much more expensive than just controlling the means of labor. Because when you owned your labor, you had to take care of them and provide for them in so many ways. If you don't own your labor, then you have the ability to exploit them at their will, which is what the very basis of socialism. And so
right.
When I looked at... Go ahead.
Oh, I just when I was listening to you explain that, I what I was hearing was communism there. the slaves needed to support themselves.
No one can understand the so-called Civil War era, Darrell, without understanding the revolution against socialism in Europe in 1848. Because the revolution against socialism, the socialists were basically kicked out of Europe, many parts of Europe. Some were criminally tried. Some were even executed. And there was a mass exodus of the socialists from Europe in 1848. And unfortunately for the United States, many of them came to the United States, and their preferred method of distribution of their message was to buy newspapers. So the idea, but socialism must always grab onto moral high ground to convince the people that they should give up their rights and give up their money. So they struck the idea of
there was a socialist. There was a socialist invasion. There was a socialist invasion of the United States of America in the decade preceding the action of the Civil War, what they call the Civil War. And Karl Marx, had a lot to do with that, as I understand.
Very much so. He actually had more articles published in the Chicago Tribune than any other opinion writer during that period of time, during the Civil War era. And I will continue to throw those out there, that this was the, and what happened was, again, I'm sorry, I'm jumping around a bit, but what actually happened then was going for the money. The money was critical. The tariff was absolutely lodged against the South. It was an import tariff. The South was an agrarian society, produced very little goods and services for themselves, and so those goods and services had to be purchased on the open market. Well, the Northern industry did not want the South to be able to spend that money on European goods, which were better quality at the time and usually less expensive. So the North knew that they had to put an import tariff, a very restrictive tariff, on the goods that were coming into the country. And about 80%, 1860, you can look at the figures, anywhere from about 80 to 84% of the total income for the United States of America was coming through this tax, which was basically levied on the South. The North was using those taxes for infrastructure rebuilding without providing any of those funds back to the South for similar projects. So it was basically, as most wars are, a war over money. And Lincoln said in his first inaugural address he would not invade the South because of slavery, because he didn't have a constitutional right to do so, but that he would in order to collect the tariff. He stated it very simply.
Well, there's some corroborating evidence associated with that comment, that statement you just made about Lincoln. Could you buttress that with the describing what the Corwin Amendment was?
Well, the Corwin Amendment, and if it's okay, Darrell, I'll probably work that in just a paragraph or two down the page. But what was happening at that time was the influence of the socialists, and they were very, very, very much active in the northeastern section because, again, not to be redundant, but they love to pick up a social cause, a feel-good emotional cause, in order to promote their unconstitutional acts. Not only was Karl Marx writing for the Chicago Tribune, and there are reports in the National Archives that one of the first papers that Lincoln wanted to look at every morning, he wanted the Chicago Tribune on his desk. Of course, the editor of the Chicago Tribune was, go west, young man, go west, Horace Greeley. And and Lincoln had developed this friendship during the convention, the presidential convention. And so Lincoln was very much enthralled with these socialist principles. But it goes.
All right. This is Michael. Michael, I have to stop you. We're going to go to a break in just a minute. I want you to hold that thought. We've got a 3-minute break coming up. But I want to mention to the listening audience during the break, think about this, folks. An invasion over a tariff rather than slavery. And Michael mentioned, we can't get it back without a deep struggle. Think of Tuesday's show and John's show. That struggle's about to begin with the SES. We'll be back in 3.
I'm getting older and noticing that my body just doesn't work as well as it used to. So I like to keep fit as possible by hitting the gym a few times a week. Recently, I started having a nagging bicep pain, and it got so bad I couldn't even lift the weights. When I was complaining about it to a friend, he told me about Angioprim. He said chelation helps remove toxins, heavy metals, and cholesterol in veins and arteries that may cause blockages. You know, after just 1 week of taking Angioprim, the pain was gone, and now I'm back in the gym full strength. Scientific research proves the active ingredient in Angioprim has superior oral chelation action that helps promote cardiovascular health. So to learn more, go to angioprim.com. That's A-N-G-I-O-P-R-I-M.com. Or talk to a trained consultant. Call Angioprim toll free at 877-882-7221. You'll feel better with more energy. Call 877-882-7221 or go to the website angioprim.com.
Many people tell us about their experience with Extendivite. Just listen to what Glenn has to say.
Prior to taking it, I had diabetic neuropathy. The Extendivite reduced that significantly. Acid reflux was reduced. I had athlete's foot, very severe. Trimmed that down to about 75%. Dandruff, almost completely gone. I had occipital neuralgia at the base of my skull. I was having migraines, reduced by about 90%. Heart palpitations, my heart would kind of stall out. I would skip a beat. Very uncomfortable. And when walking from downstairs going to sleep, by the time I got to the bedroom, which is just one flight of stairs, my heart was pounding, coming out of my chest. My vision was blurry. This completely solved that problem. Great product. Thanks.
Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
You've probably heard about all the great benefits of goat milk soap. But did you know? Some companies take shortcuts. At Old New England Soap, we make our organic goat's milk soap using 36% goat's milk. That's 17% more than most others. Our bars are larger, so they last longer, producing lots of lather packed with vitamins. And our soap is a natural moisturizer that smooths dry and damaged skin. Order online at oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. You've tried the rest. Now try the best. Oldnesoap.com.
Water-based soaps on supermarket shelves use harsh chemical acids to break down dead skin cells. And that's just not good for you. At Old New England Soap, our soaps are made without chemical ingredients, contain no alcohol or petroleum products, and use 85% organic materials and carry the USDA's organic certification. Try some today. Go to oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. Oldnesoap.com.
This is Michael Herzog, the co-pilot, sitting next to my pilot, Daryl, from Alabama. An invasion over a tariff rather than slavery. And then Michael Gaddy mentioned this will never go back to the way it was before the Civil War without a deep struggle, which is indeed Trump's attempt to dismantle the SES. But let's get back to that second American Revolution, Michael Gaddy. Continue with your thought. We have a short segment here, about 4 minutes, and then another break and then a long segment. So go ahead.
Okay, thanks, guys. Let me first, just to buttress my point that the war was about money and not about slavery, let me read you directly from Mr. Lincoln's first inaugural address. And that is, apprehension seems to exist among the people of the southern states that by the accession of a Republican administration, their property and their peace and personal security are to be endangered. There has never been any reasonable cause for such apprehension. Indeed, the most ample evidence to the contrary has all the while existed and been open to their inspection. It is found in nearly all the published speeches of him who now addresses you, but I do quote from one of those speeches when I declare that, and this is especially important, I have no purpose, directly or indirectly, to interfere with the institution of slavery in the states where it exists. I believe I have no lawful right to do so, and I have no inclination to do so. So if Mr. Lincoln is to be believed at anything, we would see that in his first inaugural address, he outlined this. He said, those who nominated and elected me did so with full knowledge that I had made this and many similar declarations, and I have never recanted on them. So he states in his first inaugural address that he is not going to interfere with slavery. He has no constitutional right to do so. The problem happened is he thought the war, he would call in 75,000 troops and he would subdue the South in a couple of days or weeks, and it would all be over, and then he could go right back to doing exactly what he wanted to. The problem was when he found out that the South initially was very, very strong, especially with very good leadership militarily, that the war was into 2 years, almost 2 years deep, or a little over 1 year deep, I'm sorry. And he said, okay, look, we're having to report to the northern people, especially he was worried about this because it was really showing up in the north. There's a lot of protests. We're going, oh, hey, we've got a lot of people dying here. Maybe we need to make a different effort. So that is when Lincoln saw that unequivocally he would have to grab hold of some emotional issue to justify what they had been doing up to that point, because there were thousands of people having deaths in their family in the North, and he wasn't concerned about the South. But the public opinion in the North, he had to control. So then suddenly it became, in his mind, about slavery.
Okay, let me interject, co-pilot, and I'm going to let you take over here in just a minute. So in essence here, Michael, that means that better than a year into the war, he kind of changed gears like they tug at the heartstrings to get the continued support of the people, i.e. like 9/11, you know, to continue with this effort because of the amount of loss of life. And it, you've outlined very clearly that this in its session had really nothing to do with slavery, and he put that in his first inaugural address. Am I correct in that?
Oh, absolutely. And then with the killing of all these people and the destruction of private property, Not to mention the fact that he had shut down over 300 newspapers in the North which opposed him, and that he had imprisoned the Maryland state legislature to keep them from voting for secession because Maryland was critical to the defense of Washington, D.C. And so he arrested the entire legislature and the mayor of Baltimore, Maryland, and put them in prison, and they did not get out until the war was over. He also had issued an arrest warrant for the Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court because he dared challenge the war on constitutional principles. So Lincoln was forced to come up with justification based on the very moral principles he had abandoned when he started the war. But Lincoln and the Republicans had to be very careful, for there were several states in the North which were most intolerant of people of African descent and didn't want them in their states. So he was kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place.
Fascinating. Daryl, you want to comment before the break? Oh, Daryl. Did we lose Daryl?
Looks like your co-pilot went to sleep.
No, I'm here. Lincoln's convicted by his own logical fallacy in that he proposes he has to destroy and abrogate the Constitution in order to save it. And that's illogical on its face. So This is information that I found particularly powerful when Michael first brought it to my attention, and I hope it's having a similar impression on others.
Oh, I'm fascinated by it, I have to tell you. Now, we're coming up on another break here shortly, Daryl and Michael, and then we're going to get into another long segment. I'm going back to school and learning about the Civil War. Oh, yeah, we fought the war to free the slaves, and that's all they said, and that's back then, and that's decades ago. So, yeah, this is a very fascinating, enlightening discussion here. We're going to a break. We'll be back in a few minutes. Michael Herzog, the American Awakening, writing co-pilot with my pilot, Daryl, and Michael Gatti, my special guest. Be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Oh. Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855, the number 2, keep it today.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds, up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions have an echo in so much space. And when you're out there without care, yeah, I was out of.
All right, folks, co-pilot Michael is back, The American Awakening. Interesting. Over to my pilot in just a second, but Lincoln starts arresting these heads of state and these people to shut them up so he can abrogate the Constitution to protect the Constitution. Geez, that's almost like their, you know, income, and according to the IRS code, is income is all income. But they don't really define what income is. Anyway, over to Daryl. Daryl, back to you. You're the pilot. Fire the questions.
This is very illustrative of, circular self-serving logic and the ability to perpetrate it, perpetuate it. So, you know, what always impressed me was the Michael's history, that he went to the source documents to find, absolutely contradicts what I've always been taught. And so I was always drawn to Michael's information because at some point I came to realize that unless I knew both sides of the story, I knew nothing. If I was basing my opinion on repeated information from somebody else, particularly what I got out of school, I really didn't know anything. And so this is where Michael's information became so powerful, and particularly the sections dealing with finance, because we know all war is about money. It always was, and it still is. It has nothing to do with morals and ethics, and that's just a cover is to couch it behind morals and ethics. There's one particular area in the run-up to the war that, when Michael brought it out, I found particularly powerful, and if Michael would indulge me in bringing up the idea contained in the Hazard Circular, would that be possible, Michael?
Yes, sir. I can certainly do that, but I would like to, for those who are hearing this, maybe for the first time, Daryl, you and I have been talking about this for years, but for those who are hearing this for the first time, I would like to lay a little bit more groundwork, if I could, to buttress.
Oh, absolutely.
In the late 1850s, France was very much interested in what was going on in this country, and they wanted to find out about this great, as they referred to it, this great experiment in liberty. So they sent their most learned person, a gentleman by the name of Alexis de Tocqueville, and they sent him to America to observe what was happening and to file reports back to France. And I'm going to read from you something that he wrote back to the people in France, and I find it most intuitive about what was happening. And I read, quote, "Race prejudice seems stronger in those states that have abolished slavery than in those where it still exists. And nowhere is it more intolerant than in those in states where slavery was never known. So the Negro in the North is free, but he cannot share the rights, pleasures, labors, griefs, or even the tomb of him whose equal he has been declared. There is nowhere where he can meet him, neither in life nor in death. In the South, where slavery still exists, less trouble is taken to keep the Negro apart. They sometimes share the labors and the pleasures of the white men. People are prepared to mix with them to some extent. Legislation is more harsh against them, but customs are more tolerant and gentle." And that can be found in Alexis de Tocqueville's book, Democracy in America, on page 343. But then I found this at the University of Chicago Press about that period. And it says, both Indiana in 1816 and Illinois in 1818 abolished slavery by their state constitutions. And both followed the Ohio policy of trying to prevent black immigration by passing laws requiring blacks who moved into the state to produce legal documents verifying that they were free and posting a bond to guarantee their good behavior. The bond requirements ranged as high as $1,000, which was prohibitive for a black American in those days. Anti-immigration legislation passed in Illinois in 1819. Now, this is against the black race. Passed in Illinois in 1819, 1829, and 1853. In Indiana, such laws were enacted in 1831 and 1852. Michigan Territory passed such a law in 1827. Iowa Territory passed one in 1839. And Iowa enacted another in 1851 after it became a state. Oregon Territory passed such a law in 1849. Blacks violated these laws, faced punishment that included advertisement and sale at public auction.
And those were in the free states.
Yes, this comes from a work called Slavery in the North, North of Slavery, the Negro in the Free States, 1790 to 1860, and that can be found at the University of Chicago Press.
Well, so let me interject.
Those very words. Go ahead. Go ahead, Michael.
I was just going to interject here. So what we're saying in is all these states, all these laws were enacted, and if the black people broke these laws, they were auctioned off into slavery. And it's sounding to me like, if I'm getting a good overview, Michael, it sounds to me like they actually were, I mean, the black people living in the South actually were more free than the black people living in the North. Am I reading this right?
Yes, sir. That is basically what Alexis de Tocqueville, who traveled extensively all over the states at the time, north and south, and he wrote extensively on this, and this was his observation. That's why I think showing a source from outside that what didn't have a dog in the fight shows the actual truth in more instances because there was no bias.
Over to you, my pilot.
Well, it's consistent. That time period is consistent with what we experience today too. It's we have these contradictions that are irreconcilable. They state one thing, but actually the opposite is employed. And we talk about liberty and freedom, but yet we have a Patriot Act that denies you arbitrarily liberty and freedom, security and rights, but the NDA abrogates those. So I see a I see a repeat. I see a pattern here. Maybe it's just me.
No, it's a distinct parallel. Go ahead, Michael. Yeah, I'm looking at this. My overview of this is, and this obviously is nothing new. We've got the Patriot Act. We've got the Military Commissions Act of 2006. We've got the NDAA. We've got all this talk about constitutional rights, but we really have none. And here we have this this North versus South, you know, philosophy where the black people in the South are actually have more freedom in their customs than the people in the North, and laws in the North being passed against the blacks in the North. Yet they swing this whole ideal around later in the war when the complaints are coming out left and right from many, many people, heads of state and so forth. So they tug on the heartstrings of the American people to, again, like 9/11, get their support to continue the war, and they change the narrative to freeing the slaves. All the while, Lincoln is locking up all these people that are speaking out. Am I right there, Michael?
Well, you nailed it perfectly. And so then, as the war was going badly, and had the, I believe, and I've done a lecture series on these, had the commander of the Southern Army been Thomas Jonathan Jackson instead of Robert E. Lee. And I based that on the fact that Jackson went to both Lee and Jefferson Davis with plans for what I believe would have ended the war very hastily. And the fact that Jackson, immediately after the first Battle of Bull Run, wanted to charge right in, right on the tails of the fleeing Yankees, right into Washington, D.C. and sue for peace, but was held back by the Confederate government. I believe that, but anyway, Stonewall Jackson was very active in the Shenandoah Valley in 1862. He had an army of about 30,000 people, and he was consistently whipping three armies that outnumbered him 3-1, led by Fremont Banks and Shields. And he had kicked their butts all over the Shenandoah Valley. And the at nighttime, the bridges into Washington, D.C. were heavily guarded because they thought Stonewall was going to march from the Shenandoah right into D.C. So, but after all of this, Lincoln decided that if he was going to bolster the support in the North, his only chance was to bring up this emotional issue, as you alluded to, Michael. And so what he did was he said, okay, we're going to make this war now after what we've gone through for well over a year, about a year and 6 months totally. He said, we're going to make this an emotional issue. So he came up after the Battle of Shepherdstown, or Antietam, as the Yankees call it. After that battle, he decided that he was going, because it was a draw. It wasn't a victory, but at least he had a draw. And so he was going to throw something out there to try to bring the people in the North back behind his program. Now, you have to remember, in the meantime, he had kicked a member of Congress out of the United States and exiled him for opposing him on the floors of Congress. That was Vallandigham, or Vallandigham, whichever depends on your pronunciation. So he had a lot of opposition in the North building against him, so he had to come up with some emotional issue. And so he came up with the Emancipation Proclamation. Now, I would like to read directly about some of the thoughts on this, and it says, pardon me, despite this expansive wording, the Emancipation Proclamation was limited in many ways. It applied only to states that had seceded from the Union, leaving slavery untouched in the loyal border states. It also expressly exempted parts of the Confederacy that had already come under Northern control. Most importantly, the freedom it promised depended upon a Union military victory. Although the Emancipation Proclamation did not end slavery in the nation, it captured the hearts and imagination of millions of Americans and fundamentally transformed the character of the war. Now, what I just read from you comes from our own National Archives and Records Administration. Our own government admits that it freed no slaves, except the slaves in the South where they had no control. And so we look at that and, you know, and if I may regress, and Daryl brought it up a minute ago, is the Corwin Amendment. Pardon me, I'm sorry. Let me get a little drink of water here. What happened with the Corwin Amendment, which is also mentioned in Lincoln's first inaugural address, He said, I believe there is an amendment, which I have not seen, and you have to call BS on that because he was responsible for getting that amendment written. The documentation is clear in the National Archives. So he wanted this amendment made, and he says in his first inaugural address that he would support this amendment. So the amendment, the Corwin Amendment, basically would have made slavery legal in perpetuity in the United States and outside of the dominion of Congress. So he was proposing to the South, here, if you will just stay in the Union, we will give you slavery forever in perpetuity. You can have it if you just won't leave the Union, which this is absolute proof that the South did not secede over slavery, because if slavery had been the issue, they could have come right back into the Union, did away with their secession documents, and they would have had slavery forever. So basically, one of my premises and one of the things I teach in my classes is, had it not been for the South demanding to stay outside of the Union, we would have had slavery in perpetuity. That Corwin Amendment had already been mailed out to the states, and three northern states had already ratified it at the time of the beginning of the war. So the states were willing to jump on this slavery in perpetuity as long as they could keep the revenue coming in from the South.
That's absolutely mind-blowing, Darryl, isn't it? I mean, think about that, people.
Go ahead. Yeah.
I mean, the hypocrisy of this. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, it's consistent with the counterintuitive nature of our politics and what we're told and what is done for the reasons it's told and done for. So a contemporary example of it is George Bush getting up there prior to 9/11 stating, well, you know, all these countries hate us for our liberties and freedoms, you know. These are all obfuscations, which Michael and history points out. All over to you.
Go ahead, Michael.
All right, and I would like to point this out, and I'm jumping ahead a little bit. In 1867, Congress passed a law requiring the former Confederate states to include black male suffrage in their new state, in their new mandated state constitutions. Ironically, even though African-American men began voting in the South after 1867, the majority of northern states continued to deny the black man the right to vote. And that is found in the Constitutional Rights Foundation, African-Americans, and the 15th Amendment, for those who demand documentation.
So history, again, is written by the winners, and the only way that we get the real overall consensus of history is for a gentleman like you to dig into the National Archives of the secrets that they have already talked about behind the scenes that they don't want us to let out. And we get it from a Frenchman that comes over here from an overview from the outside reporting on it back to the French people. That's disgusting. That is absolutely disgusting. And this is just one of a litany of examples of the hypocrisy in this government. Darryl, your thoughts?
Well, yeah, it's exactly like here's a really good example. If you really want to understand what's going on in the real on the ground actions in this country right now, politically or financially or otherwise, you have to look outside of this country. You can't listen to the Ministry of Smoke and Mirrors, the Ministry of Propaganda. They're not going to tell you the truth. So this is just more consistency. And it's founded in history. Thank you, Michael Getty.
Unbelievable. Michael, I'm enjoying this immensely because you're giving me a history lesson that I should have learned 50 years ago and never did. It was deprived from me, as well as the rest of this audience, for the real reasons of the politics of what was going on. And as we go through, and I'm talking about all the way through our lives, folks, I'm talking about all the way through our parents' lives, our grandparents' lives, we have been repeatedly lied to by these offspring of cockroaches for 150 years, even longer. You know, so I'm glad to have somebody like you, Michael, come on and actually expose, share the documents with my audience, and put a little shining beacon of light onto the real truth of why we are where we are today. Now, we've got a break coming up here in just a second, and then we're going to come back. We'll have a short break before the top of the hour, and then we're going to get into another long segment. So, folks, buckle your seatbelts here, because you know me. I'm a guy that connects the dots, and I'm looking at all this fascinating information that Michael Gatti is bringing out here, and I'm saying, you know, how is that history repeats, or history repeats itself, or you can't understand where you're at in the present unless you look at the past to understand the future, something like that. I think George Orwell said that. But here we are.
Well, there's, you know, there was an old philosopher that said that for a man not to know the history before he was born is to forever remain a child, and I guess that statement bears truth.
Yeah. Okay, we got to take a break. We'll be back at 3 with my special guest, Michael Gatti, and my pilot, Daryl from Alabama. Stick around. More to come.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org, and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Did you know that neither the American Medical Association nor the American Bar Association were established to benefit the American people? Have you recognized that in our country, health care has little to do with health, and that our court system has nothing to do with justice? The priests of both medicine and law have been incentivized to implement a dark agenda on behalf of the Bilderbergers and their ilk. To protect ourselves and our progeny, we need to take a much closer look at how these two giant industries really work. Join me, Al Whitney, on In Defense of Humanity, Saturdays at 7 p.m. Central, as we expose the matrix and learn how not to consent to our own destruction.
We're back. Michael Herzog co-piloting today. You know, I mean, I'm sitting back here taking all this stuff in, taking voluminous notes with what Michael Gatti's putting out, and I'm fascinated. I'm both fascinated yet disgusted at the same time by virtue of the fact that my government would hold this information from me, not just with this, but of a whole mess or litany of events throughout history. With that, Daryl, what are your thoughts regarding that statement that I just made?
it's consistent with what we learn as we do our own research in our own near history. It's just an example of why we can't trust other people to interpret information that we should be responsible for finding ourselves. I mean, how many times do you have to be lied to before you realize you're being lied to? Now, my question for Michael is, you've done a really great job here of explaining what it wasn't about. Well, and we know it was money, but who else was involved in this, Michael? I mean, you know, who stood to benefit from all this action?
Well, if I may, please let me offer a couple of I feel like there's salient points here, and one is about these documents that exist that our government has. And years ago, and recently, when I've been collecting these documents, when I would go into the National Archives or Library of Congress or University of Virginia, University of North Carolina, University of South Carolina, wherever I was doing my research, I would always obtain copies of the documents that I felt were extremely relevant, especially those which contradicted what I had been taught. And so I've got volumes and volumes and volumes of these. And, you know, at one time when I was collecting these, I think they were like a nickel a piece or something like that per copy. And you could have them done and get those copies, but they were always stamped in the lower right-hand corner, usually with a red stamp, and it would say a certified document from the National Archives or Library of Congress or where have you, and it would say, you know, not for resale. And, of course, I understand why they did that. That makes perfect sense. But, you know, and I've been teaching this for 20 years or so. And recently I had a very good friend back in Colorado, a retired Army colonel, and I won't mention his name, hi, Jim. But he contacted me, and he said, I remember sitting in one of your four-hour lectures years ago and remember you telling me this happened and that you had documentation for it. He said, well, ironically, all these years later, it has come up again, that subject, and he said, could you please forward me a copy of the document that you have? And I said, I would be more than happy to, so I take a copy of it, and I send it to him both by email and by instant message. And a couple of days later, and this has been within the past 3 months, a couple of days later, I get a phone call from the colonel. And he says, Mike, I just wanted to let you know I appreciate you sending me that document. It's invaluable in what I'm doing. He said, but I decided I wanted a copy for myself, so I contacted the National Archives. And I asked the people there if they could forward me this document and the document number. And he said, I was very shortly informed that that document was no longer available to the American public.
All right, let's stop with that, Michael. Hold it. Let's stop with that. We got to take a top of the hour break. We'll be back in a couple of minutes, and let's continue with this, Michael Gatti and Daryl from Alabama, my pilot. See you right after the top of the hour break, folks. Be right back.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers, have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.